ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
What do you want to be when you grow up? If you're still asking young people that question, it might be time to reconsider. Hello, Lisa Leong here for This Working Life, helping to make your work life better. As we head into the holiday season, you may have a little bit more time to talk with the young people in your life. And this episode is a really useful conversation starter, as well as being one of our most popular stories this year. It explores how to help school leavers assess career paths by asking deeper questions. There are many different ways to help young people into careers. Here's one of them.
Hi, I'm Jenny and I have a son who's in year 10 and they have a weekly newsletter for careers at his school, which is fantastic. They have open days at universities. They've got info for careers in the Navy with various open days for other unis and all sorts of different things. Really informative for parents and for students to sort of get their head into what the different offerings might be. I think it's great.
And Jenny sent us a copy of that school newsletter as well. Thanks so much, Jenny. So it's a very big and important job helping young people find their way forward and supporting them through that process. JP Michel is a Canadian organisational psychologist and the author of The World Needs You, A New Mindset for Student Career Exploration. JP, hello.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you, because we've got a hairy problem to figure out here. So why do you think asking, what do you want to be when you grow up, can be a problem, JP?
When young people hear, what do you want to be when you grow up, they hear that they need to pick one job title for the rest of their lives. And if that sounds difficult, it's because it is. It's not what we meant. But unfortunately, the question is putting additional pressure and anxiety on them and preventing them from exploring what's possible.
And so your experience is that this question creates anxiety. What then happens when that young person is trying to make decisions with all of that anxiety?
Well, first of all, 50% approximately of these kids aspire to be one of 10 job titles. And Lisa, you know the jobs: police officer, doctor, lawyer, engineer. The list is very small. And this is not good because there are over 40,000 jobs available today. So we know that young people are choosing from a very small pool of what's available. So they're not scratching the surface of what's possible, of the opportunities that actually exist that might engage them.
And so there's an overwhelming number of roles that we don't know about, and also a future that doesn't have clarity and can be entirely overwhelming for young people. So how can we try to alleviate this?
I'll give you the example of a young person I worked with called Anna. At the time, she had no idea what she wanted to do. She couldn't answer that big question. So I wanted her to take a different approach because it's not about choosing one job title forever. What I asked Anna to do was to flip through a copy of a magazine and to find her favorite article. In this case, I gave her The Economist, for example, and as she flipped through, she picked an article about a specialized algae that was being developed to clean polluted waterways from oil spills. Now, to Anna, this was exciting. This was motivating. She wanted to talk about this. She explained how this connected with her and her values. What we did next was work backwards. We looked at, okay, well, if this is the challenge you want to solve with specialized algae, let's look at what company is working on that. We found their name. We looked them up online. We worked backwards again to find what jobs they were offering. And finally, what you needed to learn to be able to do that. So by working through it backwards, we discovered something called materials science and engineering, which Anna had never heard about before.
And that's a really interesting point that you're making here, JP, is that both of you actually hadn't heard of that specific role or university career, and therefore you wouldn't have been able to point her in that direction had you not gone this flipped way of doing things.
You're correct, Lisa, and this tiny example showed you, number one, I felt embarrassed. But number two, the reason I felt embarrassed, Lisa, because wasn't that my job? And this question I've been throwing back to the field of education and career development for the last 10 years to say, Is that really our job, to be matchmakers? I don't think so. Historically, maybe we were. We were meant to measure people through some sort of psychometric test and match them to one career for life. That's not true anymore, Lisa. I don't know the 40,000 jobs anymore. So my role has changed. I'm not a matchmaker anymore. I'm a catalyst. And this message has resonated. There are now hundreds, thousands of schools, even more educators that are transitioning their approach from matchmaking to being career catalysts. And it starts with one key shift. Instead of asking Anna, what do you want to be when you grow up, and matching her with a job title, we're asking young people to find problems to solve. And in doing that, we're flipping the model. No longer does Anna need to pick an education program, and she follows this in a very linear way and pigeonholes herself into one thing forever. Instead, she can keep working backwards and find new problems to solve, helping her make a better decision about what she wants to do in post-secondary, for example, but also equipping her with a lifelong skill to be able to navigate the changes that are surely coming in her career.
JP Michelle is an organizational psychologist and author of The World Needs You, A New Mindset for Student Career Exploration. And we are talking about avoiding that, maybe that question of what do you want to be when you grow up, and looking at challenges or problems over careers. Pippa writes, I never knew what I wanted to do when I grew up, but I just figured out what I wanted to do next. It's how I've had a varied career in the arts. Exploration is key. In the climate crisis, we need adapters. So I hope there is encouragement for the young to adapt and dream about regeneration so we can all transition. How does this example fit within your approach, JP?
In my experience informally speaking with people like Peppa, they describe themselves as the exception. I don't think that's true anymore. This is more the rule than the exception. When I was working as a consultant, by the way, in Canada, I'm not called a psychologist because I have a master's degree and not a PhD, but as an organizational psychology consultant, I got to meet with people like Peppa and thousands of adults in their working careers in the middle of a transition. They were going from one job to the next. And to me, that was at the beginning of my career. This felt wild, completely different than what I expected careers to be. How come all these successful people were transitioning to a new problem to solve? I eventually learned that this was not abnormal. It's actually typical that people are changing like this. In fact, there's one theory of careers that describes this very well, called the chaos theory of careers, by Dr. Jim Bright and Robert Pryor, who articulated how this is happening to more and more people. And if Anna is going to work for 40 and 50 years, if generative AI is going to be integrated into her career, we can expect more and more change as people's careers evolve.
Now, you use something called the challenge mindset. What is this?
It's an approach to career exploration that focuses on challenges to solve instead of job titles to fit into. And I've been lucky enough to learn from counselors, advisors, teachers, all over the world, in Canada, North America, in Australia, New Zealand, that are using this approach to transform career exploration, because the traditional approach of using a career test to match someone to one job title, it doesn't work anymore. We're not doing accurate predictions of what someone will do forever, and students don't like it. They're not engaged, you know, by being matched by one thing, so it's time for something new.
JP, you say that you could either go to a magazine or you can try and figure out what the problems are that need to be solved, but you've created some cards that specify a whole range of challenges on these cards. Can you give us some examples to bring this to life for us?
Sure. I launched a deck of cards as the simplest way to teach Anna and all of these students that are struggling with this question, because it's a game. I literally put the deck of cards in their hands and I asked them to sort them into three piles: what you're not interested in, or very interested in. So they're looking at a card that says, I want to end extreme poverty, or protect society from crime, or design the future of transportation. Our most popular card is, I want to improve mental health. And every student who goes through the exercise, they're going to have some cards in there. I don't want to do this pile, and I might want to do this pile. And the most important step in the process is, once a student is done sorting, they get to talk about their choice. This is key because they're making meaning. They're going about their exploration on purpose. And this is an important part of the conversation that's missing right now.
JP, I'm going to stop you there because I've had a look through the cards and I couldn't find the card that just says make lots of money. So And the reason why, there's probably a specific reason for that, but the reason why I'm asking is that I know that a lot of young people are very concerned about the cost of living. They're very concerned about the fact that they might not be able to afford a house in the future, and they are a little bit obsessed about how much money am I going to make. So how do you deal with something like that?
You're right, first of all, and I'm surprised at how concerned these students are. But when I try to put myself in their shoes, they just lived through COVID, this event where they were really destabilized and saw their parents lose control, a little bit of their working lives potentially. So I understand the need for certainty and want to make a good salary. There's no card that says make lots of money, because in order to make money, you need to solve an important problem. That's true in most cases. So what I encourage students to do is to get more specific. It's not that different than the other student that tells me, I want to help people. We help them get more specific. And what I mean by more specific is identifying what the world needs. Lisa, can you imagine a Venn diagram with three circles that are intersecting? One of them says, here are my interests, what I like. Here are my strengths, what I'm good at. And here are challenges to solve, what the world needs. And we're helping students find the middle of that so that they can explore with purpose and they can balance those elements. And they'll get to change right over the course of their career, but they want to overlap in some way in all three buckets.
You're listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National. I'm Lisa Leong. And my guest is JP Michelle, author of The World Needs You, A New Mindset for Student Career Exploration. So what did you want to be when you grew up, and how's that turned out for you? Catherine writes, I wanted to be an architect, but I dropped maths in favour of art, so I wasn't able to go into architecture at university. I ended up with a Master of Visual Arts and Painting, and I'm practising as an artist in between my own building design project. I'm never happy unless I have one on the go, and I'm three quarters of the way through my latest one at the moment. Thank you so much, Catherine. Let's hear now from Kate McBeath. She works with career advisors in schools in Australia and New Zealand through her business, Career Central. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Lita. Thanks for having me.
Can you give us a bit of the lay of the land when it comes to career advisors in schools? What are they telling you, Kate?
Well, I mean, I think careers advisors are really time poor. So they have a fascinating job, but it is a very varied and broad job. And they need great tools that they can implement flexibly and quickly. You know, one minute they might be speaking with a really academic student who's looking at uni overseas, and the next they might be with quite a disengaged student who's thinking about leaving school. And that can be group, it can be a full year level presentation, or they could be one-on-one. So they have to be really adaptable and shift gear really quickly. And so I like to think about them having, you know, that metaphor of a toolkit of different tools they can draw on. And this, you know, the work that JP's doing, this is, you know, a key tool for them.
So how are you using the challenge mindset in your work with career educators?
So, well, we've been collaborating with JP, and what we've been doing is designing classroom and one-on-one student activities with the challenge tools and resources that JP has, but also with free resources like the United Nations goals, so that we're giving schools different options. And then what we've also done is create some integration with our online platform so that, you know, if a careers advisor is running a session on the challenge mindset, students can record and retain their favourite challenges, any of the career insights that they're gaining throughout the session and the process, and then that means that career advisors can also access that information. So a lot of what we do with our platform is around trying to help make careers advisors as efficient as possible, give them all that information at their fingertips and not lose any of that student data so that they can really focus on the more human-centric, kind of the interpersonal and the higher value work that they do with students.
Kate, you mentioned the toolkit. What are some other great resources for people?
Well, I think, like, you know, JP just literally was talking about that Venn diagram, right? You know, like, what do I like? What am I good at? You know, what does the world need? And I'd also be thinking about things like, you know, what do I value? Which is probably where some of the things like I value high income might come in, for example. So, you know, on our platform, we have a range of other tools where students can do a lot of that self-exploration stuff. So looking at what their skills and strengths are, looking at what their personal qualities are. They can do some career quizzes or personality-based quizzes to kind of get a sense of pathways. But like JP, we're really interested in you know, occupational clusters, looking at things more widely than just a single job title, and very much, you know, encouraging them to explore different options. But yeah, it's a whole, it's putting, you know, this is a journey, right, through high school, and careers advisors are trying to expose young people to as many things as they possibly can while they're there.
Kate McBeath there works with career advisors in schools in Australia and New Zealand through her business Career Central. So JP, Michelle, you're talking about having that conversation around the problems and the challenges that the student has identified. What would you say in a nutshell are the next steps for that person?
They were going to work backwards. So as soon as you find a challenge to solve, you can what I call flip the model by going from a challenge to what organizations exist in the world that are working on that. And students love to see practical examples of real companies doing really important work in the world. And then after that, they can research, well, what jobs are available in these organizations, which ones interest me, and then what can I learn to do that? And there's a few things that happen in this process. When young people discover these series of problems to solve or challenges to meet, they start to feel like the world needs them. That's a big shift, because these career advisors and counselors, sometimes they meet with students that feel like the opposite. The world doesn't need them. And Lisa, I disagree. I think there are so many problems to solve in the world. We need young people to get themselves leveled up so they can contribute to make a difference in the world. So what we're talking about at this stage is motivation. I meet with a lot of students myself who have lost motivation, don't feel motivation. But when they get to pick a problem to solve that's motivating for them, the exploration happens very, very naturally. And it's a relief for them to discover that in the real world, it takes an interdisciplinary approach to solve a problem. Let me explain. If a young person chooses to improve mental health, it turns out that being a clinical psychologist is not the only way to do this. If they're very good with data, they can research this issue about mental health and contribute to the literature, the research, and our understanding of how to improve it. There are so many practical ways that they can contribute.
And JP, you were talking about how important that conversation is around this. So what advice do you have for parents and mentors listening about the way they should speak to young people about their careers?
If there's one thing I hope parents take away from this, is that career exploration is not about finding the one perfect job forever. It's about discovering challenges that excite young people and exploring their unique opportunities to contribute. Many students end up waiting until the end of high school or the end of post-secondary to have this important reflection process. It doesn't need to start then. It can start very young. When I say very young, I don't mean matching students that are 6, 7, or 8 years old with one thing, but it's getting them to explore and ask questions about the way they want to shape the world, whether it's a large-scale change or a small change in their community. Yeah. And then seeing how they're uniquely wired to contribute. And that's exciting because it makes education relevant. Every class you take in school can help you learn something that contributes to the problem you care about. And parents are great to set up this conversation. They don't always want to be the career coach, so they may rely on outside help to get that to work. But parents are often the catalyst that encourage their students to go out and explore.
And not actually thinking that you're going to be the careers counselor there as well, I think is really helpful for parents.
You got it.
There are some important points to make here, though. So if, as a kid, I know what I want to do, so I do want to be a doctor, scientist, or a builder, some other traditional job, do I need to do a career development exercise like this, JP?
Some know, they already know what they want to do, yet they haven't tried it. They can't see what they look like. One of the first students I saw, Lisa, when I started coaching and back in 2010, told me they wanted to be a business lawyer. Wow, that sounded great. So my first question was, what's a business lawyer? They said, it's law for business. That's it. It was a very surface level understanding. So even for those students, I want them to dig deeper. What's the purpose? What's the meaning behind this? You know, what do they actually do? When I was in the working world, you know, I was asking questions like, how do these organizations make money? Who do they help? So it's these deeper questions that students, even if they're sure, they could be exploring to better understand what's going on. How do I prepare? Do I really want this?
JP Michel is the author of The World Needs You, A New Mindset for Student Career Exploration. And we've got Brendan, who is a careers practitioner working in regional Australia. And he actually uses your approach, JP, and suggested that we interview you about it. So thanks, Brendan, for doing that. And here's what Brendan told us.
I was recently working with some young people in my role as a career development practitioner, and both are of school age but not enrolled and not sure about where to access learning and training. They're both really keen and motivated but just weren't sure where to find it and what to do. They were new to the area, and being able to have a meaningful conversation and ask some great questions was just a real barrier for them at the time. The challenge mindset cards and the activities we were able to do, it gave those young people a sense of how to explore and build a bit of agency in what questions to ask in terms of being curious and where they'd like to contribute to the community and how they can go about exploring their options for the future.
Thanks so much, Brendan. So, JP, then finally, how do the challenges over job titles approach help people prepare for those jobs that might not even exist yet?
You remember Anna at the beginning of the story, she picked algae. This led her to material science and engineering. In the short term, she stepped into her lab in material science and engineering in university with confidence. She could connect what she's learning with the impact she wants to have in the world. In that lab, guess what might happen? She might find a new problem to solve. She might get deeper on this problem, find another one. When Harvard University started using the challenge mindset, they had the same idea in mind. We're not pigeonholing students into one thing forever. We're helping them navigate. So we want them to go to school, to go onto the workplace, to discover new problems to solve, and to think about how they can contribute in a cyclical way. And this is going to help people stay fresh as they change, stay fresh in terms of what the labor market needs, and navigate a career that's likely to change many times over the span of the decades that they'll be working.
And if people want to use some free resources, where would they go for that, JP?
I've got a lot of information on my blog at mysparkpath.com. I also post ideas about careers and points of view on LinkedIn. They can connect with me there. Those are probably the best two places. I also like the recommendation that Kate made earlier about using the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. Some teachers, like Brendan in the classroom, could use the news as a source of problems to solve as well. So I think there's so many resources and ways that we can tackle this.
Thank you so much, JP.
Thank you, Lisa.
JP Michel is an organizational industrial psychologist consultant and author of The World Needs You, A New Mindset for Career Exploration. And here's a final piece of advice for young people from Madeleine.
You need experience to get a job, but you need a job to get experience. So internships, volunteering, part-time gigs, things that teach you what school won't or university won't, even going for coffees with people who are in jobs that you think are kind of interesting. These are the best ways to really rub up against the real world of work and understand where your interests and curiosities might lead you.
Thanks, Mads. Up next, try this. And it's time for Try This, advice and tips you can try to improve your work and life. When you have competing tasks vying for your time and attention, how do you prioritise? So here's a tool that's made popular by Stephen Covey, author of The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. You might know it as the 4 Quadrants, and it's actually based on the Eisenhower Matrix. So here's how it works. Get a blank page. You put 4 squares in there. These are your 4 quadrants. Quadrant 1 is urgent and important tasks. You do these now. Quadrant 2, not urgent but important tasks, tricky things that sometimes get forgotten, not anymore, capture these here. Quadrant 3, urgent but not important tasks, delegate these to others if you can. Last quadrant, not urgent and not important tasks, don't actually need to do these, so cross them off your list. Give the 4 quadrants method a try this week and report back by emailing us at thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. And a final word on our story about career challenges, not job titles. In answer to the question we posed, what did you want to be when you grow up and how's that turned out for you? This working lifer's response was, I wanted to be a writer from a young age. I got a full-time communications role by volunteering as marketing director for Little Athletics, a career change in middle age. Volunteering gave me the experience I needed to get a paid role. Great advice there. Thanks for listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National. It was produced by Michelle Weeks and engineered by Carey Dell. We're on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. If you haven't already, search for This Working Life on the ABC Listen app and tap the heart to follow all of our stories. I'm Lisa Leong. Until next time, love your work. Ooh, an old favourite.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.